From WGCU, this is the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. I'm Carrie Barber. Today on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club, we hear from Amy Silverberg. Her first novel is out now. It's called First Time, Long Time. In it, Allison, who's an aspiring writer, is wrestling with grief over her older brother's death. Her father continues to be the overbearing figure he's always been, and she's trying to piece together a career. Allison meets a famous radio personality many years her senior and starts dating him, learning to cater to his narcissistic ways. The book is full of really sharp observations, and it's very funny. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to talk with Amy Silverberg today. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Okay, so you are primarily a short story writer, I believe.
Yes. Yes, although my agent told me to stop constantly saying I'm a short story writer as I promote my novel. But that's what I feel comfortable in. That's what I like. That's what I teach. Learning to write a novel was this novel. I sold it on 30 pages. Frankly, a short story. And I've never had to stay with characters for that long and watch themes develop. And I've never had to go through so many revisions because I'm really a sentence level writer and never think about plot at all. I just sort of watch plot develop out of voice. Yeah, this was so many drafts. And now I'm a novelist. Now I'm writing another novel, but I think short stories are just, I'm into the brevity. I always want to be off the page. And I'm just a sentence by sentence by sentence. What do they call that? I'm a bleeder, not a barfer.
I don't know those terms.
Have you heard those terms? No. Just that some people kind of barf it all out and then they go back and edit and trim like hedges. And as a short story writer, I'm sentence by sentence by sentence. And then when I get to the end of the short story, it either works or doesn't work. I don't do a ton of, I jostle the sentences around, yeah. I change words, but I'm not doing huge rewrites. So that made a novel really challenging for me. Fun.
So how did you, I mean, this might be too big of a question, but like, so how did you get there? I mean, did you have to,
great question.
Did you have like a whiteboard and you were like, okay, I need to follow this plot and I can't let this drop and blah, blah, blah. Like,
no, it was, I'm so surprised now when people tell me that they liked the plot or that it feels like a real plot driven novel, because I think to myself, God, there's nothing I'm worse at than plot. And I think it did develop through character. The first few drafts, nothing happens. Uh-huh. At one point, someone just pulls out a gun. Like nothing makes, I had a draft where it was from every character's point of view.
Yeah.
My first drafts also, I think, were really bad because I was trying to sound like a novelist. The editors at the publishing company were sort of like, we bought this on 30 pages. Like we took a flyer on you because we like the voice of your short stories. And I had had short stories in the Parish Review and Best American Short Stories, places like that. And I think I'm a voice-driven writer, mm-hmm. kind of funny, mm-hmm. sad. And somehow that was getting lost in this weird, overly formal third-person mm-hmm. novel. Mm-hmm. So once I kind of found the voice of Allison, that's where things started to come together. And then every draft more would happen. And then I started kind of just rearranging the fragments I had written, the little short chapters that I had written into a plot that made sense. I mean, I couldn't believe it when it came together. It was like a shock to me. I worried for so long. I guess this is also the problem with writing under, what do they call it? Spec or deadline, getting paid before the thing is done.
Right, right.
Is you're worried the entire time that it will never come
right.
together. And
but
so it was such, so I was so happy when it did, that it came together. It was, still seems like a shock to me.
And it very much did. I mean, you're very self-effacing, but like, I loved it so much. And I just whipped through it.
You.
It was so, it held my attention. Absolutely. And I loved the characters. And it's just a great, I've been recommending it to everyone. I loved it so much.
Oh, that's so nice of you. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why it came together was because I'm a voice-driven person, and once I started doing the thing that I do well, it led me through to the end. It gave me a lot of confidence for another novel, because now I'm like, okay, I know, not that I know how to do it. I know every novel requires a different skill set or a different way of doing it, but I know that you can be in the middle and think I will never get to the end in a way that makes sense. It will never happen, and somehow, like magic, if you keep at it, it does come together.
Yeah, it does. And you've done it now. Now you've done it once.
Now I've
So
done it. Yeah.
even if it's, I mean, I'm sure it will be hard. It will be hard every time, but it's still, you can look at that one on your shelf and go, okay, I did it. And I know we were talking before we started recording about that you have a PhD, so you really studied literature like from an academic standpoint, and which I'm so curious about for a fiction writer. What did
Well, so
that?
it's a double doctorate, and I cannot recommend it enough at USC. It's a double in creative writing and literature. So the people who get into my program are really there for creative writing. It's because you write well enough. But then because it's a double doctorate in literature, they make you jump through some literary analysis hoops. But we're not really doing the same things as the people who are just there to get PhDs in literature. They write a 120-page dissertation on literature. We write a 60-page dissertation. I wrote about the female comedic voice in contemporary American short stories. So a lot of Laurie Moore, a lot of that kind of what I like to read and what I like to write. And then the larger dissertation was a collection of short stories. But I loved it. I stayed there so long, I made them force me out. I stayed like 8 years because you're being paid to read and write and teach. And I also love teaching. So I couldn't decide when I got into a PhD because I kept thinking, I'm not an academic. I'm a writer and a comedian. And then I did it, and I'm so happy that I did. The best decision I've ever made, really.
So it's basically like your peers were, we were talking about Jean Shen Ho, who's
Yes, shout out to Dean.
she's so, such a great writer. She also went through that program. So were your peers mostly other writers?
We would take some classes with PhDs in literature, and occasionally they would come into a creative writing workshop. But for the most part, you had a very small cohort. It would only be one other fiction writer or two other fiction writers, or one to three poets. And then you would take workshops with that small cohort. So Jean was in a cohort after me. A lot of good people have come after me. Sam Cohen, if you know her, has a great collection of short stories through Grand Central called Saraland, I really recommend. And it's a lot of good people come through that.
And I want to talk about you're also a stand-up comic, you mentioned.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating to
So
me because
embarrassing to be a
it's
stand-up comedian. That's what I think.
it seems like stand-up is the writing is so short and punchy, and novel writing is the opposite. I mean, how was it to do those things side by side? Do they kind of feed each other, or was it difficult to get into one head and then into the other head?
No, I mean, I might argue that yes, the length of the final product is different, but it's all sentence by sentence by sentence. Like a joke will not work if you add an extra word sometimes. The rhythm of the joke is off, and then you'll take that word out, and now suddenly the joke works. And I think it's the same. I'm a sentence level writer, so I think it's the same whether you're writing a short story or a novel. You read it out loud, and you think something about that sentence is off. And then you add or take out a word, and suddenly it works. In the doing of stand-up, it's much more instant gratification. You get on stage and you do it. Whereas I can't think of anything more delayed gratification than writing a novel.
10 years
You're
years
toiling
later.
away. Yeah, you're toiling away for so long. But I do think, even thematically, I'm interested in performance. I also think, writing process-wise, I'm interested in performance. I read everything aloud. I read my own audiobook.
Oh, how was that?
It was really fun. I was like, I want to do more of these.
Oh, that's cool.
But the guy who was who I had such a sweet,
Like
like
director.
older engineer, yeah, director, and he was like, you really know the material. And I was like, dude, I wrote it. I know exactly how I want it read.
That's great. I love when authors read their own audiobooks. It's
Me
so,
too. It was so fun. It's crazy what the tape picks up. It picks up every gurgle your stomach makes. Someday.
So, okay, just to get to the story a bit of First Time, Long Time, Allison starts dating Reed, who is this famous DJ, and or he's not, is he a DJ?
Kind of
Yeah,
radio
radio
personality,
personality,
kind of a la Howard Stern, one might say.
It's so funny because when I was reading it, I kept thinking of Joe Rogan. I
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. No, I'm like old school. I
And
was
then I
a
saw
Howard
in
Stern
your
fan.
afterword, it was, I was like, oh, Howard Stern makes a whole lot more sense.
Well, I also think, well, obviously, this is part and parcel of the book, is that I think Howard Stern, he's old now. I
Right.
still listen to his show occasionally, though not as much. But his politics now are like quite left wing.
Yes,
And
he's
then,
changed.
and he's
Yeah.
not that popular anymore. So that, but he was known to be this shock jock who was like extremely crass. And then in his personal life, he's always pretty buttoned up and in a long time marriage. And I just think that paradox is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think difficult men are interesting. One could call my own father, whom I love very much, a difficult man. Howard Stern has daughters, and I always just thought, what's it like to be under the shadow of a man that famous and that all-consuming?
He takes up a lot of space,
Yeah,
psychically. Yeah.
and I'm interested in also those kind of childhoods, I think, a childhood
Yeah.
in which one person took up a lot of space, which you're hard pressed to find a writer or a comedian that didn't have a childhood where some interesting dynamic was happening.
Yes. But that's what I was going to ask you. Like, what do you think Allison sees in him in Reed? He's quite a bit older than her, and they just kind of meet in a bar. And it almost seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like he's more interested in her at the beginning, and she kind of gets into it later.
Yeah, she sort of passively
Yeah.
agrees. I
Yes.
don't know. I think part of it is was a her brother who since passed was a huge fan. Her father was a huge fan. I think there is something when you're feeling lost of letting someone sort of take charge and then
Interesting.
suddenly waking up to the fact of how have I gotten here? What is happening? I'm interested in passive women finding agency, I think, in both short stories and novels. I have a long-term boyfriend, and I think maybe I'm used to the man liking the woman more. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think men are all that great, you know? So I think I liked the idea of her sort of, part of it is like an LA thing. LA is a place I've lived here my whole adult life, and I'm still fascinated in the way of what might happen, like that you can go to a bar and meet a
Yeah.
Howard Stern type and you could
Yeah.
hit on.
And I was wondering, I mean, since you say you like to write about like persona and
Yeah, and
performance, like,
performance,
is
yeah.
she kind of trying on, you know, she's kind of taking on her brother and her father by kind of linking up with Reed, you know, is she,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And this is actually an interesting question you ask because I've never dated an older man and I actually find them really not attractive. And I always, maybe you can see that in the novel, but I always think to myself, what is it about older men that other women like so much? And I do think there is something about the power, not even the wealth, but the power, especially if you're feeling a bit powerless, that can be
Yes.
really alluring, compelling.
Yes. And you mentioned Los Angeles, and I feel like this book has a real sense of place in Los Angeles too, with the climate and the cars and the driving, the traffic and
Yeah,
stuff.
you're always driving. The amount of time I spend driving, and I both hate driving and I hate how much people talk about themselves here, but then I also like driving and I like talking about myself. So I think that's the whole paradox too. When I'm teaching, I'm always telling my students that what we're going for is paradox. While this, also this, you know?
Yes. If you just tuned in, we are talking with Amy Silverberg. She is the author of First Time, Long Time, which is a wonderful, funny, quirky, and very observant novel. I have so many little rabbit holes I want to go down. Let's see, which one shall I choose? You said that you're teaching. What is that like these days? I'm just curious, like, are your students, do you have to battle with AI? And are your students like reading? Do they like to read?
So I taught last year was the first time I had taught undergrads in person since pre-pandemic. I taught
Oh.
a little bit on Zoom, and I teach creative writing. So if they're using AI to write creatively, I don't know. And
And that's
that's
sad.
such a disservice to them that I'm
Yes.
not putting it through AI machines. And I give them this whole speech of, in my class, they're not creative writing majors. I was teaching creative writing for non-majors. So
Oh.
I'm not grading them based on if the stories are good. I'm just grading them on if they tried. So to use AI the moment you're supposed to be creative would be so disappointing to me. I complained the entire semester about all of them. And then at the end of the semester, I felt so fondly toward them. I felt like I could kiss them on the mouth. I think, yeah, they're on social media too much, but they do like expressing themselves creatively. I wish they read more, but I think they are also just, I think they're longing to be creative, to express. A lot of times they said that they hadn't done something like this since they were kids. They hadn't written a short story. They
Huh.
hadn't. So I like that. Mostly I teach adults, actually. I teach for the Center for Fiction and Grub Street, sometimes UCLA
Oh, okay.
Extension, sometimes
Yeah.
Stanford Extension. So if you're an
Okay.
adult who wants to learn how to write a short story, take a class with me at one of the many institutions where I teach.
This book is also about grief, which I love writing about grief and reading about grief. It's so difficult to kind of get a handle on. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, how was it to write about grief?
I think Allison says this in the book, but she says loss is an engine. And I think I kill off a lot of parents in short stories because I want to see a character move through the world. I want her to have a reason for moving through the world in a way she's never moved through it before. And I think grief is a great engine. Loss is a great engine. You can look back on a time and think, wow, I was really going through something. And I think short stories or novels in which a character is quote unquote going through something are always really fun to me.
I felt like you had a really light touch with the grief. Like, Allison is very much thinking about her brother, obviously, who she recently lost, but it's like she can kind of barely go near it, so we readers can barely go near it too.
Yeah,
But
I
yeah.
think that's a nice description. My favorite kind of voice, the books I, when I became serious about writing, and even before that, I was a reader before I was a writer. When I was little, I wanted to be a professional reader. The books I love are books where it's funny, sad. I wrote a
Yeah.
dissertation on the female comedic voice for a reason. I think what Laurie Moore is able to do, that kind of tragedy and humor dovetailing, it makes the grief sadder and the humor funnier. It's just really moving to me. It's the way I think I like to move through the world is to say something funny about something sad.
Yeah. And I'm sure that ties in with your stand up too. Like, that's kind of
Yeah, and
what
they do
happens in stand up too.
overlap. I used to use a Laurie Moore line in some joke, talking about a man and growing up in the long shadow of his father's neglect. And I'll quote a book. I think they all fit together. People are always asking me if you had to pick between writing and stand up, and I couldn't, and I wouldn't because they're two sides of the same coin to me.
That's such a weird question.
Such a weird question. I don't know. People want to put you in a
How
category,
dare
I
you
think.
do
In a
both?
box. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. How dare you be serious about two very difficult things that make you poor?
Bring them on. I loved your style of, like, I felt like you would pepper, like, important facts throughout the novel in very short sentences. Can you say, like, how do you know when to tell the reader something and when to hold it back? When is it too early? And when do you know what I
Oh
mean?
God, yeah, but I don't know that I know. I
Oh.
mean, I think a lot of that is revision, and I was just having this debate actually with I taught a Zoom class last night, and we were looking at the short story Safari by Jennifer Egan, which was in A Visit from the Goon Squad. It's honestly not a good story to teach in writing short fiction where to begin because it's so masterful that it almost like blows the top of your head off. Every time I read it, it makes me lightheaded because
Yeah.
getting into every character's point of view, and she's zooming forward, zooming backward. But all this to say, one of my students was pointing out how often she just tells things versus shows things.
Oh.
And he was saying, isn't the adage like show, don't tell? Like, how do you know when you're supposed to show or don't tell? And the only thing I could say is it's instinct. It's instinct,
Yeah.
and you got to read a lot, and then you got to write a lot. And it's a style choice, is I think stylistically, I often like to just say it, to say the thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of when to mete out information, that was the hardest part about writing a novel and took a lot of kind of jiggling around later.
Okay.
Also, I
Yeah.
don't outline or anything, and which takes a lot longer, though I don't know many literary novelists or short story writers who do outline. But with that said, you discover things because you haven't outlined. So I would write something following sentence by sentence, and then something would appear to me of, oh, I didn't know this about this character. So now that I know this because I wrote it and it feels true to me, now I got to go back to the beginning and make this thing true.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Don't they say, like, in part of what's fun about reading, like the discovery, but
Yeah.
I think if the writer is finding that discovery while they're writing, that shows for the reader. Whereas sometimes I'll read a book, I like a literary mystery. I'll read a mystery where it's plotted within an inch of its life, and
Yeah.
there's just no, like, you're just seeing the outline beneath it. No,
Yeah.
joy. Or unlike Liz Moore's God of the Woods, who, yeah, did you read that?
I haven't read it yet, no.
She did not outline, which is so wild
I know,
because it's
I just heard an interview with her, and
I
I
did,
have.
yeah, I did an interview, or I facilitated a book club with
Oh,
her,
you
and
did?
all she had was this beginning image of a girl out of her bunk, and the mystery is so complicated, and like there's so many threads, and the fact that she did not outline it was like really inspiring to me.
Yeah, she was just on Fresh Air, and she said she would just write like one little Word document for each thread and then put the separate Word documents away, and then eventually she would like gather them all together. I have no idea how she did it.
So wild.
It's very mysterious, but I'm looking forward to reading that. But anyway, unfortunately, we are running out of time. Is there anything that you would
I
like
talked too much.
to?
Sorry.
No, you didn't. It's an interview. That's what you're supposed
Kidding.
to do. Is there anything that you would like to add about the book?
No. I hope
Okay.
that people read it and that they like it. I'm working on actually two new novels at the same time, seeing which one wins out. And hopefully people will like whatever I write next. Hopefully they like this one, and hopefully they like the next one.
It's so
Thank
good.
you
I loved
for
it.
thank you. And yeah, I just what I want people to know is it was really hard work to write. So thank you for all the kind words that anyone has said. Thank you even for buying it, even if you don't read it.
Silverberg, thank you so much for joining us on the Gulf Coast Life Book Club. That was Amy Silverberg, author of First Time, Long Time. Buy the book from Macintosh Books through bookshop.org or order it from Books and Books in Miami. I'm your host, Carrie Barber. We had production help today from Mike Canary and Jared Gonzalez. This is WGCU FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.